So we hold these people up and show them that, you know, there's some interesting things going on there and they might want to tie into it to help their efficiency, to help their profitability, their bottom line, and to keep things going.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this Field View episode of FP Next, powered by John Deere. I'm one of your co-hosts for this farmer and rancher-driven podcast, Sarah McNaughton-Peterson, and I'm here with Kurt Arnes.
Hi, Sarah. Yes, we're powered by John Deere, so for all of your equipment and technology needs, see your local Deere dealer. So, Sarah, this morning, I think it was about 15 below in Nebraska, I think maybe you have something that's even colder than that, but my understanding is that you are coming back recently from CattleCon in San Antonio, and it was like, what, 80 degrees down there when you guys were there, so it was summer, and now you have to come back to winter. But I did see on a bunch of the Farm Progress and Farm Press social media platforms a lot from CattleCon. So did you have a good time while you were at CattleCon?
I did. It was so fun down there. And now, as we're sitting with like a negative 30 degree temperature today, I'm wishing I didn't complain so much about the 80 degrees. It just feels so hot down there. But it was super great. The convention was fantastic. That was my first time going, along with Mindy Ward and Shelley Hughley. So it was super great, and continue to watch the Farm Progress sites for all of that content. We've got a lot of stuff we'll be sharing soon. And I know it's also cold in the Nebraska area, but again, we're heading down south for today's episode where we're going to be announcing the 2025 High Cotton Award winners.
The High Cotton Award program works to help growers produce more profitable, high-quality crops and provide growers with hard-hitting information about technological advances, government regulation, and marketing opportunities. The award identifies the top cotton producers in each major cotton-growing region.
Absolutely. And we're just heading right back down to cotton country as we welcome our guest for today's episode, senior editor of Delta Farm Press, Brent Murphy. He grew up on a third generation cotton farm in Arizona and has worked in ag communications for over 25 years. After he attended Arizona State University, he was a partner on the family farm growing wheat, cotton, alfalfa, and pistachios. And now he resides near Memphis, Tennessee, and joined Farm Progress in 2019 as a content director for Southwest Farm Press and Western Farm Press. And he became the editor of Delta Farm Press in 2020. So welcome, Brent, to FP Next. We're excited to talk all things cotton.
It's good to be here. Being able to talk about probably one of my most favorite things in the world. Growing up in the cotton industry, literally, it's just been wonderful that I could work for the industry for 25 years and then move over to Farm Press. And, you know, the Farm Press publications are located in the southern tier of states, and which is cotton country. So I'm right at home, and I don't know, I've got a cotton lapel on my on my shirt this morning. So I don't know what that says about how enthusiastic I am about cotton, but we're there.
So Brent, this is kind of a big week for the High Cotton Awards as we drop this particular episode down. Can you tell us just a little history of how the award came to be and then how it's awarded, you know, across the Farm Press regions?
Sure. The first High Cotton Awards were given out in 1995, and it was something that Farm Press editors and some others came up with to really celebrate cotton in the U.S. You know, it's I don't want to say it's a different culture, but it is a culture unto itself. And again, you know, in the South, definitely where historically it was located, as well as moving west into Texas, where now we have our largest volume of cotton coming out of, and then into the west, into the desert valleys, where cotton is grown. First off in New Mexico, West Texas, and Arizona, down in those river valleys and nowhere else because it needs to be irrigated. They need to have access to water. Thing is about those regions is they can get water on the cotton when they need it. And so that's what makes the West unique. Also, California. California may be a little bit different because in the San Joaquin Valley, they're growing so many other crops, and cotton is a bit of an aside, but Arizona and California is where the extra long staple cotton is grown, which is Pima cotton that they make fine sheets and luxury linens out of. A funny aside for that, it was actually grown, started in Arizona for the war effort to make tires for Goodyear, and they found that it was longer and stronger, and so it makes such a fine cloth that it's really beautiful if you see it woven in some of those fine uses. So yeah, across the belt, it's unique areas. It's grown a little bit differently most everywhere else, but it's definitely a staple in those areas where it's grown.
So this is definitely something that might be maybe more in like our northern areas. But I know, Kurt, we've got those Leopold Award winners who are always talking about their conservation and kind of very similar efforts, it sounds like, to highlighting these top cotton growers. What's one of the main importances of kind of sharing these top growers with the rest of the nation?
First off, I think it celebrates the industry and the innovation that takes place there. When you put a personal face on it, it's something that everybody can go to, and they really, you know, recognize, especially some of these people that are honored this year who have been sustained leaders in the cotton industry for years and years. Guys like Taylor Sledge and Sledge Taylor, who have just been stalwart in their focus and cotton leadership in those national organizations. And so it puts a face on it, but I think it also gets the word out that we really need to, we can do it better. We need to do it better, and we can do it better. And so we hold these people up and show them that, you know, there's some interesting things going on there, and they might want to tie into it to help their efficiency, to help their profitability, their bottom line, and to keep things going. In many cases, some areas, cotton is really the mainstay, and it's really the thing that keeps people farming. And so putting bright and shiny faces up there that are impressive in what they do is a good place to go. And that's, I think, one of the big things that, one of the big highlights of the awards.
Brent, one of the things I noticed looking back at your archive of all the winners of the High Cotton Award over the years is that not only are these folks, you know, leaders out in the field themselves, but a lot of times with farm organizations and even, you know, inside their own communities with civic organizations or church groups. I mean, you know, a lot of the folks that you are giving this award to are really outstanding, you know, in their own rural communities as well. So I think that's really interesting. So can you tell us just a little bit, you know, about the growing circumstances, other challenges that kind of range between, you know, Southeast and on to Southwest across the regions? There's different challenges, I'm assuming, for each kind of area, right?
Oh, yeah. And it's kind of evident if you drive across. I've driven across the country, across the Cotton Belt, an awful lot. And the big thing, I think, for me, of course, being from the West and knowing that, you know, we wouldn't have a crop if we didn't put water on the crop, but seeing the water situation across the Cotton Belt, and the further you go west, the drier it gets. And so there are things that brings to the table. You know, we started on our place, we were affiliated with the University of Arizona and their experimental station there in Maricopa, Arizona. And at a time when they were doing a lot of stuff with irrigation efficiency, and not necessarily in the varieties, but in field application, how you put the water on, how the water is spread, how you're able to make that water get to where it needs to go for the plants. Some of that work started out there, but also since moving here, I've noticed that there has been a lot of water efficiency things going on here, where we have so much water in the Mid-South and in the Southeast, where so many times we're working to get the water off of the field, as opposed to getting it on the crop to water the crop, they're trying to move it away from the field so it doesn't stand at the bottom of the field. Or, you know, in weeks like this, where we've had flooding up in northern Tennessee, you know, trying to get it off of there so that we could actually keep the crop growing. Water is one of the big things. The nature of cotton is the more water you put on it, the larger it's going to go, the more vegetative it's going to go. And that takes away from the effort to build the lint within the bowls. And so if you've got a big old vegetative plant growing out there, you're not going to have the lint turnout that you would if you keep slowly eke that water in there when they need it, just right where it needs it. because, you know, like everything else in the world that's alive, you know, the focus is reproduction and getting more out. If you're putting less water on, it's going to be more focused on the lint and the seed and those things. So that's a big thing, I think, is water. Insect pests, you know, it's been interesting to see since the establishment of the award, that was around the time that we started working with transgenics in cotton and slipping that first BT cotton, the first BT gene into cotton to kind of avert the feeding from some of those worm complexes. We've moved from that initial phase into an era where we've got a number of different things in those different crops. But back to how different that is across the belt is those things, those insects were different and had different impacts in those different regions. And part of it was because of the environment, because of the fact that we had probably less insect pressure in the West versus out here in the Southeast and the Mid-South. That's changed a great deal. And, you know, back when they first put in the transgenics, they were doing a lot of spraying. So that's another thing is insect pressure. Weed pressure is the same. You know, the incredible ability for us to get in there and, you know, even under circumstances where some of those weed applications are not as useful as they used to be, we're still able to get in there with one or two shots of something and really take care of the weeds. Unlike years before when we had to spray and spray or chop and chop. So it is different.
No, it definitely is. And I love when you talk about the genetics and highlighting the different varieties, because even like, you know, in the Dakotas and Nebraska where Kurt and I are in similar growing regions, the varieties can change so much. But digging in a little bit deeper and kind of highlighting one of those award winners, we're actually going to talk about the 2025 award winners today and a little bit about their background. So do you want to start off and share a little bit about the Delta winner this year?
Sure. The Delta winner this year is Sledge Taylor. And I've known Sledge for a few years. I worked with National Cotton Council from like 96 into 2008. And so Sledge was in the periphery. He was in leadership in the South, in those organizations that established policy. And so he was very active in that. Since then, he has been the National Cotton Council's president. He's been president of the Southern Ginners Association. So he's very active. One of the things that it just stands out so much about Sledge is the first time I was on his farm and he grabbed me and said, "Come on, let's go look at something." And he took me out to a water project, basically a water efficiency project on one of his farms that he was putting in. And he had started doing that kind of thing very early on in his farm career. He's been on his farm 50 years, and it's a generational farm. Most of the winners are generational farmers, but Sledge people have been on his land for, you know, pretty pushing 200 years. They want to manage it in a way that they can keep it in the family for another 200 years. And so that's really what he's looking at. He noticed at a young age that erosion was taking part on his farm, which is up out of the Delta in the hills, just east of the Delta, the Mississippi Delta. And, you know, a lot of highly erodible soil. He started playing with things and he's moved. His evolution has been definitely, you can see it through the years, started out as just an interest. He's religious about cover crops. And his cover crop fields with cotton in them are producing so well. He gives the credit to that, to the health of the soil. He has earthworms. You can see the castings of the earthworms up on the top of the soil. He's got his cover crops are a variety of cover crops, including radishes, broadleafs, you know, grasses. It's a well-maintained biosystem, really. One of the really cool things that we got talking about when I went out to the farm this last time was about mycorrhizal fungi, which he says is you know, the roots or the fingers of the fungus is going and actually helping his plants pull moisture and pull nutrients from the soil. He's all excited about that stuff now. His crop shows. He's highly productive. He has his own gin, so he's ginning his own crop, so he knows exactly what he should be getting or what he is getting. And he's been involved in a number of soil health groups to really put the word out there about how healthy soil adds so much to the environment of his crop. And so it's exciting. I mean, that stuff's exciting to me. Of course, I'm kind of a soil nerd, so whatever. But so that's Sledge. Not necessarily in a nutshell, but so he's got that acumen for leadership and then also the basic biology of the soil. He's an exciting one to talk to about those things.
So it sounds like, you know, a lot of your winners are really soil conservationists as well as farmers, like so many of the best farmers in the country. You know, that's such an important part.
Yes, absolutely. The Southeast winner is, and this is kind of, if you're a little bit dyslexic, I don't know that I am, but this was hard for me. So we just talked about Sledge Taylor. Now I'm going to talk about Taylor Slade. Taylor Slade is a cotton grower out of Williamston, North Carolina, and he's been farming a good long time. He calls himself an old dirt farmer. Aside from the fact that he gets out in the dirt and grows cotton, that's probably a little oversimplification of this guy. He also has been in leadership, National Cotton Council, the North Carolina Cotton Producers Association, and the Southern Growers Association. He's been very, how do I put this? He's 75. I hate to say give out ages. He's 75, but he actually is one of the most progressive farmers that out there. He always keeps on track of top trends in production. And so he's able to track that stuff and understand that, you know, you're going to get left behind if you're not paying attention to varieties, you know, new varieties coming out, you know, new traits in those varieties, in those cottons, as well as field production. I think the time of heavy dirt work is over in most production environments in the farming community. You know, the fewer passes, the better. First off, we know that because of fuel efficiency and the fuel costs. Fuel is crazy expensive right now and, you know, has been for a while. But so he tracks that. As a result of that, he is tracking his costs and making sure that within this environment of high production costs that he's, I don't want to say he's doing great, but he's doing a good job at making sure that he has a handle on what he's able to do in his field. So he's another good one in terms of both that field environment and the leadership environment. In the Southwest, David Coleppel farms with his dad. He's just west of San Antonio, Texas, and they're traditionally grain and vegetable growers. They grew their first cotton crop in 2005. So he's the youngster in the group. I don't know that that's true of his age, but he has been growing cotton probably a shorter period of time than some of the others. This is such an incredible story. This year, he grew 5 bales per acre, which is high, which is very, very good. Any grower in the U.S. would feel great about having 5 bale cotton an acre production on their land. But he had a personal high in terms of his personal best this year, facing 2 years of drought in Texas. And just shows if you can eke out what to do with the water during that time, you can make a good crop. Some of the other growers' land, they do have irrigation on from the Southeast and the Delta, but David relies on irrigation to kind of make up for that drought situation that they've had. As an example, that's just amazing that he's able to get 5 bales in that area, number one, and the fact that he's been in drought for so long. So he is a younger grower than the other two that we've talked about so far, but he's definitely dynamic in the field, his operation and especially his use of irrigation. So our Western grower is Jake Kaza. He farms with his brothers, his two other brothers, Matt and Luke, in Button Willow, California, which is at the southern end of the San Joaquin Valley. And they grow primarily extra long staple cotton or Pima cotton. They've been on that land for, I think it's five generations. They came into the San Joaquin Valley in the 1920s and began growing cotton. They also grow a number of other things that, again, that area is so productive. That's an area that is full of pecan trees, pistachio trees. They have almonds down in that area, lots of almonds. They've got walnuts, as well as some vegetable production down there. It's incredible. One of the things that they have done down there is there's very little Pima grown in the Pima cotton grown in the United States. Most of it is in that Arizona, California area. And they're kind of helping to maintain that variety or that diversity of cotton at a time when it's really getting tough in California to farm because of the water situation. And they're having a big issue with getting enough water into their crops. So it's actually kind of a testament to resolve that they're still growing cotton down there. Again, it's very productive. It's just the amount of water that they're able to use. Matt is very involved, or Matt, Jake, the winner, his brother Matt, is very involved in the organizations as well. And so he's got a good handle on kind of the policy and the things that need to take place to keep cotton vital throughout the Cotton Belt. And that's, I'll keep talking about Jake, but I also want to mention that, you know, it's vital that we have these organizations to really be the guys that hold up the sword for the farm community and for cotton specifically. Jake is involved in the California Cotton Ginners Association and Growers Association, SUPIMA, which is the organization for Pima cotton. Go look that up. Go to supima.com, and they're an amazing organization that do a lot and have their hands on a lot of things in terms of even fashion. The causes also host a lot of farm tours to educate the clothing brands, the brands and retailers, as well as just informational for congressmen, for legislators to get on the farm and see what exactly happens down there, and maybe getting back a little bit to that leadership. That's what's wonderful about the cotton organizations is they know exactly what they need and they're not afraid to go after it. It's amazing to see those workings in California, the people that run those organizations and what they're able to get through there. But on a national level, National Cotton Council, the Cotton Foundation, which is the affiliated industry of cotton growers and ginners, but also the research and promotion programs for national and for the states have really been able to keep up the pace with production, with pest control, with really so much, like I say, go back to legislation again. That's the big overreaching branch of what they do, going and talking and you know, providing funding for research and communications out to the public to get the word out about cotton. I mean, everybody should know, you know, I hope I'm not dating myself, but should know what the fabric of our lives is. And that's a big part of that leadership group that moved into the promotion side of things to make sure that Americans know that they're using American cotton, or, you know, to make sure that they know the good stuff.
I love it. I know I just did an article not too long ago talking about buying sustainable clothing instead of like buying plastic clothes that wear out. Yeah. It's like the wool, cotton, leather, all of those things are so sustainably made. But talking about the winners, it sounds like kind of the thing that connects them all together is they're all super involved, they're all progressive, and they're all conservation-minded about their operations. Do you think those are kind of the three main points of those winners?
Absolutely. And, you know, that that's part of that three-legged stool that I think that if you're a producer and you're not somehow involved, I mean, you don't have to, you know, lead the charge, but it really is a three-legged stool that if any one of those things is missing, I think you're missing out, and you need to at least understand what's going on and support. By support, I mean, just be vocal. You don't have to support every single thing that they put in place, but those people in leadership know that, you know, what you need on your farm. If you're not doing that, I think you're falling short. I want to throw out just accolades for the Extension Service. I mean, that's one of the easiest ways to get involved is, you know, work through Extension, go to your university meetings, talk to those people about best practices on your farm. And I know they have that information for every region of the country. Just making sure that you know everything that you can do on your farm to move that enterprise forward. And if you're not doing that, you're selling yourself short. And I don't know that you'll be in business that long, but start with Extension. It's an absolutely great use of our tax dollars. There are dollars, you know, and they're going to support us. And that's what they're put there for. So yay, Extension, and use them to your advantage. Like I say, that this is my, you know, an award season, and I'm talking the big overview of awards that go on this time of year. This is my favorite, and it's just because it's celebrating the cotton farmer. But they put a lot of thought into how these people are selected. Also, the award. The award is just the coolest thing. I wish I had one on my shelf. I got out of it too soon. The award is an actual cast cotton bowl set on a granite or on a marble base. And those things are heavy. It's a substantial award. And I think that just that point is that it is a substantial award. It's not something that we think about lightly and we just kind of throw around. We think a lot about these growers, and a lot of recruitment, a lot of understanding about exactly what they do goes into the process of establishing who these awardees are, who these winners are.
Well, Brent, you know, we want to congratulate all of the award winners because obviously they're just outstanding individuals, outstanding families, you know, in the industry. And, you know, I'm sure that Sarah's been taking notes throughout this entire episode because she's planning to try and plant a little cotton in her garden up in North Dakota this summer. And, you know, maybe someday, Sarah, you'll have that award sitting on behind you on your desk. But, you know, that cotton thing in North Dakota is a little tough, a little more challenging, maybe.
I think my garden's not going to thaw out until May at this point. So it might have to be a container garden of a cotton plant, but I'm committed. We've told everybody at this point now. So we're going to have to follow through on that for sure.
Yeah. When we had a seed breeding nursery on our farm for a while, and I just loved watching them go out and in those small plots and working with that cotton. And I got to know a lot of cotton breeders. And one of them was from China. I won't say his name because I don't want to get him in trouble, but he had brought back some seeds from China. And he said, "This is the most beautiful plot I'll take you to." And so we went over, and it was this purple leafed cotton that was just the brightest, whitest lint. He let me have a few seeds, and I tried to take some home and plant my own along the side of the house where I could grow good tomatoes. So I figured it was good for cotton. And nothing ever came out of it, but in terms of a wonderful new variety that I had bred up. But it's kind of fun to think that, yeah, I could do that. But yeah, it's a cool plant. And you know what? That's the thing. It's different from, it takes a lot of babying. It takes a lot of coaxing. And you can impact the yield in cotton by doing different things at different times of the year or different stages of its growth. You're never really sure exactly what you've got until you've got it in the basket of the cotton picker. That's the frustration, but it's also one of the really cool things about cotton. Again, it takes a different infrastructure. It's not like where you can take a combine and, you know, harvest wheat and then harvest soybean or rice or whatever. You've got to get a cotton picker and then you've got to take it to the cotton gin, an infrastructure. And we've lost some of that infrastructure in places. But there's still a good infrastructure throughout the cotton belt for the product. And I hope we're able to keep it going. And one of my first pictures of me personally is about 2 years old, or the seat, my grandpa's new cotton picker. I don't think I could hold my head up, but I was there. I was about 2 months old. And I was picking cotton. So it's in the blood. It's in the blood.
I love that. And Brent, thank you so much for joining us today and kind of sharing about all these great producers.
A special thank you goes out to our digital production and marketing team members who put in a lot of work with us. And if you want to be sure not to miss any top stories, sign up for our Farm Progress text blasts, which bring the hot stories right to your inbox.
You can sign up for those text alerts by texting FARM, F-A-R-M, to 20505. Be sure to follow Farm Progress on social media to stay up to date with ag news and more. And check out the digital edition of your regional publication, including Delta Farm Press, at farmprogress.com. Stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be highlighting the barley industry and sharing the process of turning this top crop into a favorite beverage.
Yes, Sarah, no barley, no beer. So we might have to crack a cold one and record that in the evening while we can enjoy this particular topic.
Absolutely. And you can follow along with FP Next by listening and subscribing on your favorite podcast platform, or YouTube, or Farm Progress Online, and be sure to leave us a review if you enjoy the show.
Sarah always says, 5 stars or nothing.
Absolutely, and remember, if it's agriculture, your friends at Farm Progress have you covered. Here's wishing you high yields and good weather. We'll see you next time.